With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast in which two films with something in common go head-to-head to see which film does it better. On this episode, in the red corner, I pity the fool who's going up against this movie. It's 1984's The Toughest Man in the World.
He called the toughest man in the world. It's the one who knows the right way to go. The toughest man in the world.
And in the blue corner, it's gonna be nice until it's time not to be nice from 1989. It's Roadhouse.
Patrick Swayze is
Dalton.
I thought you'd be bigger.
Opinions vary.
Roadhouse.
So what is the connection and which film will be victorious? Let's find out. It's Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken.
What up, fight fans? Welcome to Clash of the Titles. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
And I'm Chris Tilley.
Yes, we have two movies going up against each other, The Toughest Man in the World and Roadhouse. Chris Tilley picked them. The connection, then.
The connection, guys. I actually realised the connection was a bit more specific than I thought going into the rewatch, so...
Did you just think it was big men take their tops off?
There is an element of that.
It's a strong connection. Strong.
That's half my movie collection. No, what was it then, guys?
Okay, Vicky, do you want to have a go first? I think we've got it. I think I've got it.
Bouncers taking care of business.
Pretty good.
That is what it is.
I think that's it. That is it, right?
Yep. Yeah. Well, I can go a bit more specific, but what about you, Alex?
I think I've gone even more specific, but mine's tenuous. Okay. So you do yours, and I'll tell you what my weird one is.
I thought it was just two bouncer movies, but it's two philosophizing bouncers. I wasn't expecting that going into Toughest Man, because with Roadhouse, you've got the spiritual Zen philosophizer.
Well, he's got a philosophy degree from NYU, no less, because he wants to learn about, you know, man's purpose and that shit. And I'm quoting directly.
And with Toughest Man, it's more philosophical life lessons, practical life lessons he's giving to the younger generation.
Because that's what Mr. T does.
Yeah.
That's and so, self-help philosophy.
And
not
so,
like,
yeah, it was
philosophy.
A bit more specific. Why? Where were you coming from, Alex?
Right. Well, I was like, okay, it's bouncers looking after nightclubs who also, well, I hadn't touched on the philosophy thing. I was going to claim I had, but no, that would be a lie. The philosophy thing is new to me. However, I did go, there's another thing. If we assume that The Toughest Man in the World, starring Mr. T, who plays B.A. Baracus in the A-Team, is actually autobiographical to a certain extent, he, as B.A. Baracus, is afraid of flying, and in Roadhouse, Patrick Swayze goes, I don't fly.
Oh, yeah.
It's too dangerous. So it's two people who sort of, if you blur the line, are both afraid of flying. I like it.
I like it.
I like it a lot.
It's strong.
So, you gave me Toughest Man in the World, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah.
And you didn't seem happy about that last week.
This week, I was given 1984's The Toughest Man in the World, in which Mr. T plays simultaneously a bouncer at a nightclub and a youth centre worker. And do you know what? It was rubbish.
He called the toughest man.
Right way to go, the toughest man in the world. I need to know right now before we begin, like how, I can only assume you've picked this because this is so high on your nostalgia radar.
Yeah, I can briefly go into my reasons for choosing that film. I'm an older person. And back in the day, we didn't have cable television. We didn't have streaming services. But in our childhood, all three of us, we had videos.
Pull up a chair, kids.
We had...
I'm so sick of this. I am not even 38 years old.
I know, you're the younger one. I'm the oldest one here. I'll be honest about that. But yeah, we had videos that we could record stuff off the telly. But I don't know about you, but when I was younger, sometimes bits of films would get recorded. I wouldn't get the whole films. And I only had like 8 videos, so they'd get watched over and over again. It was either watch Pebble Mill or Crossroads or watch that VHS again. And so I had about half an hour of The Toughest Man in the World recorded. I got watched over and over and over again. And so when I thought about doing maybe Bouncers as a subject, I thought, well, this is a great excuse.
Can we just establish you had a very different childhood to me? Because I had lots of bits of shows recorded on VHS, but the show was The Red Shoe Diaries and the video cassettes were hidden in my loft.
I'm talking about when I was 5.
Oh, right. Sorry.
I'm five years old, you dirty old man.
Oh, I don't know. You matured fast, didn't you?
And so, yeah, it was a chance for me to go and see if this film is as good as I remembered.
Nope. Sorry.
And also for us to do a deep dive on these two sort of 1980s icons as well.
Right. Let's stop there because I've never been as angry as I was watching that movie.
Okay, I'm disappointed because I actually quite enjoyed it.
Vicky,
while at the same time thinking it was.
I'm really sorry.
I enjoyed it while at the same time thinking, oh, this is quite bad. But
I'm just. Did you not find it was like watching an hour and a half of a government safety video? You know the one that's like, don't play near pylons. It's that, no?
Yeah. And they have a name for these in America: after school specials.
Oh right.
Yeah.
Let's just establish like the semblance of plot in this. By the way. Straight to TV movie, and I'm making a rule right now. From here on in, on this podcast, we have to have films that got a theatrical release. No more straight.
That's half the films on my list.
Right, well,
I've got to get rid of.
And
now.
That is why I'm putting the rule in place. So, Mr. T plays Bruce Brubaker, a ridiculous name and a waste as well, because he basically just plays Mr. T. He's a bouncer at a nightclub, but he also runs a youth club for troubled teens, and he makes them play basketball, and it's all going so well until he realises that they've got no money left and he has to get some money to fund the youth club. Now, to get money to fund a youth club, it turns out you need a licence, you need to be registered, you need accreditation. The antagonist for 70% of this film is bureaucracy.
I've got that written down. Mr. T hates bureaucracy. I wrote it down 3 times. I didn't realise how much bureaucracy there was in this children's film.
I actually quite liked it from the standpoint of working for it. I work for an actual charity. So I enjoyed those scenes. I was like, this is what it's like. Funny that you would show that on telly, but good for me.
He goes back to City Hall in an attempt to meet the deputy mayor to get his licence and be registered as a charity. This is a major plot point in this film. He returns and there's a slime ball guy and he goes, I'm sorry, you can't see the deputy mayor today. And Mr. T keeps coming back. He keeps getting sent to other places.
It's like to the school board, to the district councilman, to Parks and Rec. And this is all the Department of Social Services this is happening. Yeah. Which is really exciting for a 6-year-old to watch.
What sort of child were you?
No, this section wasn't on the video I had recorded.
Christopher, do you want some G.I. Joe or do you want a binder?
No, I thought this was one of the best scenes in the film, though, when he's in and out of that office.
That's saying something, isn't it?
Let me give you an idea of why it's not the best thing in the film. Because eventually the guy goes, oh, you're back again to see the deputy mayor. And Mr. T's like, I am. And he's like, well, you're going to have to wait. And Mr. T, at this point, you're like, this is the point where Mr. T is going to be Mr. T. He's going to pin him up against the wall by his lapels. And he's going to be like, I ain't waiting, sucker. I'm seeing the deputy mayor now. But when the guy goes, I'm afraid you have to wait. Mr. T goes, this is Mr. T goes, I came prepared and holds up a packed lunch. And then the next scene is a montage of him eating sandwiches and apples while he waits to see the deputy mayor. This is a movie that I had to watch. I'm fucking furious.
But that ties in with his philosophy in this story because he believes in tact and diplomacy rather than going in first with his fists.
And
he doesn't believe in child safeguarding policies. Like, he doesn't have a license to look after children. that's a really serious matter. And the teacher woman's like, well, the city has a very closed mind about these things. Well, stop it fucking short. You can't leave a man in charge of children, vulnerable children, I might add, just because he likes it. That is not how it works.
Yeah, he seems bewildered by the idea that there might need to be some form of management in place to register what he's doing.
Do you know why? It's because he can't read.
So
he never learned about that stuff.
A CRB check because
he never learned about that stuff. But you're saying we didn't get angry, Mr. T, in that scene. But in the very next scene, he screams out, I've been social, now I'm going to get some services. And kicks down a door and gets arrested.
Yeah.
But it wasn't locked. That's the other thing I thought. I mean, continuity is not this film's strongest point, perhaps. But the door wasn't locked. So you don't need to kick it down, you need to kick it open.
You're missing the point of Mr. T, though.
Okay. I'd like to talk about the nightclub that he works in.
Can we?
Faces Nightclub.
Faces,
yeah. What the fuck sort of club is that?
There's questions,
it's like
isn't there?
Someone doing like some avant-garde dancing.
I thought it was
like
sexy aerobics.
Or a sexy robot, maybe. And then that woman from Acorn Antiques scurries across the dance floor going, what's happening? Whatever.
So I couldn't work it out either. I think they were basically going, it's a strip club. But also, it's not, because this is a Mr. T movie. So no one takes their clothes off. But that woman who does interpretive dance to experimental synth jazz.
She does.
Yeah. And yet her husband, which is worth mentioning because it's the first fight we get.
Oh, yeah.
Where her husband comes in and treats her like she's stripping.
Yeah.
This is a movie that doesn't quite know what it is. He's like, you get off that stage. It's like, she's doing interpretive dance
Leave
to synth
alone.
Jazz.
Yeah. That's no harm in it. It's art, actually. Yeah. Dickhead. Although someone does undress, Mr. T undresses when he has a minor, Billy, who I'll call Billy the Kid, in his apartment. And he's like, you can live with me now, son, which is very, very problematic. Yep. And then instantly takes his top off.
For a man who is so flippant about being registered as a youth worker.
Oh, yes.
And is so open to inviting a child to live with him.
Yeah. The bit where he screams at Billy the Kid when he finds it, get out of my apartment. It's like, you should get out of his apartment. You should not be living with that man.
I felt like it was a weird trend.
I'm going to work out now in front of you. What can you bench, Billy?
Oh, no. This doesn't make you feel uncomfortable, does it? No, it's fine. It's fine. I have nowhere else to go, so I'm kind of stuck here. You don't need to pay rent. There's other ways we can figure this out.
I do feel like much better films than this from this era did seem to have a trope of older men hanging out with kids in a way that was never quite explained.
Yeah, I wonder why that is.
So you had, you know, what was Marty McFly doing spending all that time with Doc Brown? And Daniel LaRusso and Miyagi spending all that time together. Like,
don't sully the good name of Back to the Future.
I just think 84 to 85 was a weird time for screenwriters thinking that all kids do is hang out with old people.
John P. Navin is the actor who plays Billy. He looks like an 80s Artful Dodger.
He does. I put that, or Peaky Blinder.
Yes.
There was some interesting behind the scenes things, though. Did you notice it was produced by Goober and Peters?
No.
The men who went on to make the Batman movies.
John Peters, oh, really? Giant Mechanical Spider, John Peters, produced this. Yeah, he did. Yeah, the man who wanted a giant mechanical spider.
That's because I was squinting over the credits, being this can't be it. Like, this isn't right, is it?
And doing my research on this one, I discovered that someone involved in this film actually I wrote about in my dissertation when I did my master's.
Oh, that's nice.
Yes.
I didn't know you had a master's.
The guy,
I actually, right now, I would rather talk about that dissertation than this movie. Can we do that?
I'm glad you asked. It was about the history of the British horror film industry. And the man that wrote this film in the 50s wrote a lot of Hammer Horrors movies.
He did. He wrote The Curse of Frankenstein, Dracula, The Mummy. Yeah.
That completely shocked me when I saw that the other day.
Why? Because they were good and this isn't.
No, they're just so different.
Yeah. Good and not good.
One's a film, one's not a film.
One has an antagonist that isn't paperwork.
We've come this far without talking about the toughest man in the world contest.
Oh, okay. Who wants to say his name? Because truly...
Oh my God, it's brilliant.
Tanker Weems, which sounds like a name when you hear, the response should be, does he?
It's like the Jeremy Hunt culture secretary.
So who is Tanker Weems?
I don't know.
He's the toughest man in the world.
Yeah.
Three times defending champion.
What he's not is an actor.
he's a former Marine. He's a former lumberjack, and he's a Canadian footballer, not an American footballer, a Canadian footballer.
Tanga Weems is an interesting person. He's really angry about something, but that's never delved into.
Steroids will make you angry.
Yes.
And I think it's fair to say he's taken a fair amount of Tanga's taken a fair amount
over the years.
He's been juicing.
I mean, look, he eventually comes to life in the final big fight of the movie. Can I just ask, Chris, what was... there's one stunt in it where a bus crashes through a doorway in a warehouse. And I watched that and I thought about you at that point. I thought about little you on his feet going, yay! Because that's the stunt in the film. Was that the case?
No, I don't know if I had that bit of the film on the tape. I don't remember that bit.
Have you watched it again? For this I
Well, we're building up to what I was going to talk about, so and then I could explain.
Really? Is this a build-up right now?
The toughest man in the world contest.
Right.
Which I didn't realise until doing my research this week is a real thing.
Explain that to get the money in the end, after bureaucracy is written off as an antagonist, the new antagonist becomes Tanga Weems, and to get the money, $100,000, and basically... make sure that the youth centre doesn't close. He has to go up against Tanga Weems in this competition and win.
Yeah, and so we get a training montage because he's preparing for the big contest, which involves... what does it involve? It involves
running over a wall?
Well, there's an obstacle course.
Like dressage. It looked like Crufts. Like there was little... ornamental hedges in the obstacle course like they were dogs.
It's kind of like a cross between World's Strongest Man and Gladiators.
I was annoyed when we got to the montage because I was waiting for it. We're building up to it. And then it's like, it made me, when is a montage not a montage? Is it when it's 20 minutes long? And then is it just a series of very short scenes?
Yeah, it's just in a car. It's him in a car park, isn't it, doing some press-ups.
Trying to pretend he can't run over a wall. Like, he's a very strong man, and that's the big obstacle, like the thing that he mentally needs to overcome. Can't
yeah, he has to climb over a wall as part of it. And we're told he was a very successful Marine.
Yes.
Now, I think in the Marines, in training, you have to climb over walls. I think when you're out in battle, there might be the odd wall you have to climb over. And it's not even that big a wall.
No, it's not.
So yeah, we'll get to that. But I didn't realise that it's a real thing. There's this competition called the Toughest Bouncer in America that Mr. T in the late 70s won 2 years in a row. And the casting director of Rocky III saw him on that. And that's how he got the part in Rocky III.
Oh, I heard it was actually Sylvester Stallone who saw him on it.
No, it was the casting director.
Right.
Because I watched an interview with her. Sylvester Stallone is meant to have watched it and seen him saying, I just feel sorry for the guy who has to box me, because there's a boxing element to it. And that's where the line, I pity the fool, came from.
That's right.
But I also watched a bunch of Mr. T interviews on YouTube. And over the years, he's changed where I pity the fool comes from.
Has he really?
Yes, he's claimed it's from a jazz singer in the 70s who sang a song using that line that he nicked it from. And he's also claimed that the words fool and pity come up a lot in the Bible. And so he put them together to make his catchphrase because he respects God.
That he does, yeah.
Can I ask a question? The toughest man in the world competition, the real one, are you allowed to win it by throwing tomato ketchup and pickles at someone?
Oh, God!
And smashing them over the head with a wedding cake.
Well, I did find somewhere... see, I couldn't find any footage of the real contest, but in one...
Chris, sorry. It's not going to involve that.
But they do say it involved dwarf tossing. Was part of the toughest bouncer in the world contest.
Oh, right.
But somewhere else it said it involved throwing stuntmen as well. Mm-hmm. But not food.
Okay.
Sorry to jump in. I think the point she was trying to make was just how freaking ridiculous that final fight in the film is. It's a fight where, just to explain, so they're meant to, Mr. T and Tanga Weems are meant to go head to head in the final, in a fight, in a boxing match, to see which one wins. That fight doesn't happen. So there's a plot with some mafia dudes who want Tanga Weems to win, so they're going to try and drug Mr. T, so they get him to come to this warehouse where they say they've kidnapped Billy, and then a fight breaks out. A fight involving foodstuffs and pillowcases full of feathers.
And a bus full of children. Someone says, there's a warehouse full of gangsters over there. Let's crash a bus full of kids into and they can get stuck in.
It's because the gangsters' cover is a restaurant supply store.
Because there were so many tables all laid out in that warehouse. Yeah. I thought it was someone doing a really cheap wedding. I was like, this is an awful wedding reception they're ruining.
There's a lot of balsa wood in this film. But yeah, it's mustard, ketchup, crisps, olives, popcorn and gherkins.
What it takes to make Tanker Weems finally snap is getting a bit of food on him. He gets a bit of food on him and he's had it with Bruce Brubaker and Mr. T and he goes at him and they have a fight and it ends with the toughest man in the world, Tanker Weems, being knocked unconscious by a sponge cake. That's how it ends.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm weirded out that you're saying you don't like this. Like, what is not to like about that sentence?
Because I wasn't angry at you when I was watching it. I was just completely bewildered. And I thought you were going to come in here today with answers. And you're bringing nothing.
So I'm getting to my answer now. Because we've gone all around the houses.
Sorry, we do need to establish that if that was the end, just him being knocked out, was just the end of that fight. But at that point, Mr. T goes, I'm going to go collect my winnings.
Yep.
And walks off to collect £100,000. Now, we've already established the rules of the toughest man in the world competition are pretty vague. However, I don't think a fight in a warehouse with no adjudicators from the company there is going to count as a win. No.
If you don't show up, you forfeit. And he has been arrested, Tanker Weem. Therefore, Bruce can go and pick up his winnings.
That is established early on, actually, to be fair.
So, let me explain. The one thing I think is bad about this film. The only thing. So, the best scene for me in the film is they keep repeating the fact that Mr. T, Bruce, can't get over this wall. And so when, before the climax, he's trying to get up this wall in the obstacle course and he can't do it. And then it all goes into slow motion. He takes a few steps back and he runs straight through the brick wall.
Can't be in the rules that's all right.
So I think that's when the tape ran out on my video as a kid. I thought that was the ending of the film. And it's a very exciting ending that has stayed with me. And so having to watch the food fight finale, I realised it's not as good a film as I thought it was.
There is
one bad thing about it, and it's that. You're right, it's a complete anti-climax. It should be the other way around, and you either have the big fight in the ring or you have him running through a brick wall.
Right. I mean, I do agree that, you know, the fight should take place in the ring, you know, with a crowd there.
Yeah, it's like Rocky V.
Right.
When he fights Tommy Gunn in an alley, and you're like, this ain't Rocky.
This ain't Rocky, mate.
And in terms of not revisiting stuff from your past, I was kind of weirded out by the sex worker subplot in this film.
Are you looking at me?
Yeah. Because you told me not to say prostitute, that it's sex worker.
Well done, Chris. But Learning and growing.
I am. The sex worker subplot.
I asked you to, sorry, because that does sound aggressive. I didn't tell you to.
I wasn't expecting that, though, with Jimmy's mum.
What?
I thought the way Mr. T dealt with it was fascinating when he's got Billy in his apartment.
Billy, sorry, yeah.
And then the first thing he says, going, you can sleep here. He's like, so, your mum has a lot of visitors. It's like, and Billy goes, yeah.
What of it?
Do you want to actually ask the question directly or be really weird about it? And Mr. T goes, I don't want to talk about this anymore. And then that's it. It's never really touched on again.
Doesn't Billy say she's getting too old and the competition's getting too hot?
I know, cheeky little fucker giving his mum sass.
But yeah, again, six-year-old me, that went way over my head.
As it should, Chris, to be fair.
There's also, did you spot a very successful director is in this film?
Yes, Dennis Duggan.
Is that the,
Dick.
Adam Sandler.
Dude. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I couldn't figure out where I recognised him from, because he has got quite a recognisable face, and he cameos in most of Adam Sandler films.
He does, and he directed.
And that's because he directed all... Yeah. I mean, this guy's made a lot of money.
He directed Happy Gilmore, Big Daddy, I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry, You Don't Mess with the Zohan, Jack and Jill, Grown Ups, and Grown Ups 2. He said, audiences that go to my movies don't want a message. They don't want my soul exposed or my life view. They just want to laugh. So you're 3 for 3 on failure. That's not, I'm just being a dick. Happy
Anything
Gilmore.
Happy Gilmore.
Happy Gilmore. Happy Gilmore is a great movie.
Second best golf comedy.
I don't mind Big Daddy either. That's it.
But it's nice to see where he learned his trade, though.
Mr. T is great. Like, this isn't about Mr. T being anything other than great. I remember the A-Team. He wasn't my favourite, you know.
Who was your favourite?
Dwight Schultz, Murdoch, without a doubt.
Why would you even need to ask that question?
Is it obvious?
It's so obvious.
I thought he'd say Face Man.
No.
No, okay.
No, although I did like the A-Team car, which was incredibly underused, the white Corvette. I had a toy of that. Now, so Mr. T, at this point in his life, was an icon already. He was a big deal. And I love this sort of, I want to do good. You know, I'm a hard man, but I want to do good. He did that Be Somebody or Be Somebody's Fool actual promotional help video for kids. And the advice he gives, he cast his net very wide. He had advice like how to control their anger. Fine. How to deal with peer pressure. Good. How to dress fashionably without buying designer labels. All right. And finally, how to make tripping up look like breakdancing.
Oh, that's brilliant.
And that same year, he released an album, Mr. T's Commandments. And a song from that actually does kick off this film.
I thought I could hear his dulcet tones.
Would you like to hear a snatch of it?
Yeah.
You have a shot if you have got what it takes to break away. Because the toughest man in the world is the one who knows the right way to go.
Enough of that.
Yeah.
What's not to like about that?
Are you actually asking it seriously?
I don't know.
I just think a lot of thoughts got into this.
Here's an idea for a better film. Mr. T's funding is cut off, rightly, because of child protection issues. Anyway, he needs to raise the money to keep the youth club going. Guess what he's just met? He's met a thief. I just thought, hey, you need money. You've just met a thief. Could go down that path.
Well, I do wonder if they were planning a series of these or maybe even a TV show spin-off like this was a backdoor pilot.
Like a government safety commercial.
Yet
thing.
There was only one. Every cloud. I did learn something, though. I always thought that Nick the Greek was something Guy Ritchie made up for Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels.
Now I don't know what it is.
Like Nick the Greek, when they call Billy because he's really good with numbers. They're like, hey, he's a regular Nick the Greek.
Yeah.
It's based on a famous gambler in the 40s and 50s called Nick Dandalos, a Greek guy who was a professional gambler and won millions and lost millions over the course of his life, but he was very good at gambling. So that's where Nick the Greek comes from. So the whole, it's a deal, it's a steal, it's the side of the fucking century. Is actually related to a real life person, not just Jason Fleming being brilliant.
And Billy Green also says that his nickname, he says, they call me the dude. So I wonder if the Coen brothers watch this. I think this has been a more influential film than you'll give it credit for.
You think?
I will say I like Mr. T. We have a connection. We both existed on UK TV at the same time, counting down hilarious internet videos. I did RootTube. He did the world's craziest falls, but there's no animosity. I didn't see it as competition. I saw it as a friend.
Your one stood the test of time much more than his.
Is that true?
I don't see his show on the telly anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
Can't escape your bloody one.
Because he probably gets repeat fees, so so that's why. They'd have
Shout
to pay him.
Shout out to your agent.
It's actually too true to be funny. Let's move on. Anything else?
No, I mean, I think we could probably literally move on.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
I mean, I can't help but feel this is a really one-sided episode because you know what we're talking about now? We're talking about Roadhouse! I'm excited.
The second best film of the week.
I watched Roadhouse, a movie from the late 80s starring Patrick Swayze, set against an evocative blues-inflected soundtrack. Sadly, no dancing, but there is a lot of kickboxing, which is kind of the same as dancing until Patrick Swayze starts ripping people's throats out.
If somebody gets in your face, I want you to be nice.
Don't be rude.
Ask him to walk, but be nice. Until it's time to not be nice.
So says the fighting philosopher.
Roadhouse.
So I was a bit nervous of this because I hadn't seen it.
And had you not seen it?
No.
Oh my God, you must have had the best week in your entire life.
I mean... I didn't hate it.
Yeah, talking to you guys after the last show.
You were like, so disappointed. You were like, you have seen it. I was like, no, of course I haven't.
You'd never seen it. You'd seen it quite recently.
Yeah, a few years ago, yeah.
And I hadn't seen it since 1989.
Yeah.
So we're all coming at it from quite different directions here.
By when this was made, Dirty Dancing had already taken over $200 million. So, and that was a lot of money back then. So Patrick Swayze was like, hot stuff.
Yeah.
Yes. The original, when they first released it, the tagline was "The dancing is over. Now it's time to get dirty." So they were really selling off the back.
That's really strong. Yeah. I like that. That would have had me queuing outside the cinema.
So Patrick Swayze is Dalton.
Mm-hmm. He's the best in the business.
He's a cooler
at a club in New York. The overarching plot is going to be he is going to be tempted away from that club to go to a sort of rundown, low down sleazy bar in a town called Jasper, somewhere in the
Missouri.
South. Missouri. Where is Missouri?
Midwest.
America?
Somewhere.
Anyway, that doesn't matter. So there's going to be a scene, obviously, to show off his skill as a bouncer in order to set up that he's good enough to be poached to go to the Double Juice in Jasper. And I get that. And I love the pace. It's, at the start, it's like you're on page probably six and it's like, done, you're going to go to Jasper. But I was distracted because the fight that starts it all off to show us what a badass Patrick Swayze is. Does a man kick a girl in the face?
I'm sorry, can you say that again? Can you say that again, Vicky?
I can't. I wrote it down. I was like, I'm going to say it because it's just the body part and it doesn't matter if I
pick. I didn't catch it at the end. What did you say?
I think a man.
Yeah.
Which is very troubling.
Yeah.
In order to get, he's getting into a fight with his girlfriend, I think he kicks her.
No, it's gone again. You've gone again. I'm really going to need you to say that last word.
Oh, God.
I really need you to say it.
But does he?
He does not. He kicks right. It looks like he kicks her in the fanny. But just to clarify, that's not my words. That's
I'm
what
glad
Vicky was saying.
Say it. Anyone
I'll
that said
say it.
It.
It's all right. Does he kick her in the fanny?
No.
I think he does.
He kicks the stool between her legs, and it's not his girlfriend. I presume, although granted, this whole scene is very weird. He puts a $100 bill on the table, and she stabs it with a scalpel that she pulls from nowhere, and he gets angry at that. I thought the assumption was she was a sex worker or someone he was assuming was a sex worker.
Oh, okay.
And then she's not.
And then it kicks her in the fanny. I'm sorry.
I can't believe you enjoy that so much, Vicky. I thought you'd be outraged.
I was outraged, but you know, I'm a complicated woman. So he's recruited by the owner of the Double Deuce and he agrees very quickly to go somewhere else. And
while he's stitching up a knife wound
himself.
Oh,
yeah, while he's stitching up his own shoulder.
And while creepy Kevin Tai is the guy who recruits
him.
Oh,
it's so creepy.
How is he a good guy in this? Because he's like...
It's so weird. Have you seen...
I thought you'd be bigger.
Have you seen Foxcatcher? So you know Steve Carell's character in Foxcatcher?
Yes. Right?
So he's based on a real man. And he is the creepiest... it's a very good performance, but like puts your teeth on edge instantly. And I was like, oh, here he is running a nightclub. Strange.
Not just any nightclub though, because the Double Deuce, the minute we see the Double Deuce, man, that bar looks like a whole lot of fun. It's like bar fights and craziness and rock music.
I was disappointed it wasn't called the Roadhouse, because in my head from 1989 it was called the Roadhouse.
Yeah, that would make
The Double Deuce though, that means when you throw two twos when you're throwing dice. But a deuce also means a poo in America.
Does it?
Yeah, I'm going for a deuce.
Oh.
And like a number
good
two.
To know.
So
good
this
to know.
This the bar could actually mean double poo. It's a little That's, little fun fact for you.
That's great. And when Sam Elliott gets out of his car, he goes, the double douche. And I'm like, can he not read or is he doing a joke? And I think he's doing a joke where he's like, it's just another bar to Sam Elliott.
Yeah, it is.
I don't respect this place.
On the
I'm
long highway
cooler.
Of his life.
Yeah.
I thought we spent too long establishing what a shithole this bar is. Like, it's like,
no.
it goes on for a long time. And all the men are beery, sweaty, gross, awful men. And all the women are fucking gorgeous. It doesn't make a bit of sense. Like, basically every single woman in that place is a stunner. And every single man, apart from Patrick Swayze, obviously, is awful.
But have you ever been in a bar brawl?
Wait, what?
See, I knew it'd be her and not you.
yes, is the answer.
Have you really?
I was working behind the bar. And I turned around to get something. And when I turned back, it was like a classic Western, like two warring families or something were throwing glass. Oh my God, I've just remembered another one. I've been lulled. So there was just glasses flying everywhere. I had to duck down behind the bar. We had a panic button. I pressed the panic button and then the landlady set her dog on them. And that's how that got resolved. The police didn't come. And then the second one, before the World Cup last year, we wanted to watch England and we went into the scariest pub in Lewisham. We were like, it's going to be fine because it's like, it's the World Cup. There's going to be loads of different, you know, it's not just going to be the normal clientele. Mm. And we went there and then again, I turn around and this glass just went flying past my cheek. And it was the barmaid throwing glasses back into the crowd because someone had given her some attitude. And she was picking, you know, like missiles, because she's got all the glasses in the pub at her disposal. And she was just going bang, 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 and just chucking them across
well,
the pub.
That's how you establish how cool someone is, because the minute in this movie where Dalton is standing in the Double Deuce and the first fight breaks out and a bottle gets thrown directly at him.
Yeah, and he doesn't move.
He just moves his head ever so slightly.
I tell you what, I would have moved more, but
a
man in that bar fight pushed me out of the way to run into the women's toilets. Because I was like, well, I'll move.
Hello, it's Alex. Safest place to be in a bar fight. Hello, girls. How are you doing? God,
I'll protect you.
Yeah. This bar, however, is explained to us, just so we get an idea of how much trouble the Double Deuce is. Patrick Swayze gathers the team together and goes, we've got too many 40-year-old adolescents, felons, power drinkers, and trustees of modern chemistry. Like I said, best bar ever.
I agree with you. When he said power drinks, I was like, ooh, they sound fun. Where are they?
I'm like, the trustees of modern chemistry.
There was one patron in particular I was interested to get your opinion on.
Okay.
The chap who invites another couple of chaps over.
Oh, the one who pimps out his partner.
Yeah.
I don't. What can I say? Like, what is there to say apart from that's terrible? And I thought it was going to go somewhere. Feel bad for her. Didn't I? Thought she's like maybe she was. If she's in on it, that's fine. If she's but
the alternative is he's a pimp.
Yes. That's what I've written down.
In the credits, oh, they don't have names, those characters. He's called Sharing Husband.
There you go. What? See, told you, not a pimp.
And she's called Well-Endowed Wife.
Jesus Christ.
And she's played by an actress called Cheryl Baker.
Was she?
Which was a surprise. Wow.
And absolute knockout gorgeous woman with this terrible, terrible man.
I watched this film with the commentary on by Rowdy Harrington, the director. And in that scene, he says quite angrily, "Obviously, I didn't write this scene."
Rowdy Harrington?
Yeah. I mean, he didn't write any of it, but he seemed quite ashamed of it. He seemed embarrassed of this scene. Don't shoot it then.
Now, let's talk about how Dalton is introduced, because everyone is like, we need to establish very early on that Dalton is this badass, which is done in the opening scene, but it's also done in reputation alone. When he arrives at the Double Deuce, people are like, oh my God, that's Dalton. That's Dalton. That's Dalton. Real name, James Dalton. You can see it on his medical records in the hospital. So Terry Funk, who plays Morgan, who's the big, burly, legendary wrestler, Terry Funk plays the big, burly guy who has the line, "Balls big enough to come in a dump truck."
No, to fill a dump truck.
No, it's to come in a dump truck.
Does it matter?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
No, it's balls big enough to come in a dump truck. Interestingly, I looked it up because I was like, that's disgusting and graphic, but it's actually C-O-M-E.
Of course it fucking is.
What do you mean? I honestly thought it was like, it was a suggestion about fluid filling a dump truck.
Yeah, I thought that as well.
Thanks.
Then I thought he'd said fill a dump truck, so that's why I thought that.
Yeah, no, it was come in a dump truck. I'm probably not going to say that again.
I can't think when you ever would. I don't know.
But he also goes, and this is why Dalton is such a badass, because Terry Funk, he also says, "You don't look like much to me." And Dalton's reply, you're thinking, here comes a put down. His reply is, "Opinions vary." That's how much of a badass he is. He doesn't even need a funny put down.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't say much, to be honest, for most of the film.
Yeah, he doesn't need to. When he's doing Tai Chi topless by the waterfront, and a lot of men are looking at him.
Yeah, they are.
It's amazing how many men look at Dalton with kind of like, oh my God, I wish I was him eyes.
Yeah, I wrote down film filled with dudes looking at dudes with their shirts off. Mm-hmm. And there is a lot of homoeroticism in this film.
That scene where he's doing Tai Chi at the waterfront, Brad Wesley, the evil guy, is on his quad bike at the other side of the lake gazing at him. And then Emmett, the bearded farmer, hillbilly type who Dalton rents his very unsecure room from, is like looks at Dalton doing Tai Chi and runs his hand through his hair like, oh God.
Yeah, he can't bear it.
But at that time in Hollywood, there seemed to be a gay subtext to a lot of the action films, from like Rocky III, Top Gun, Commando, Tango and Cash, right the way through to Point Break. Like, it seemed to be bubbling under all these films.
Well, is that not because it wasn't allowed to bubble over? So you had to put it somewhere.
Early on, someone says to Dalton, "I've always wanted to try you. I think I can take you." We keep hearing the ongoing line, a repeating line, "I thought you'd be bigger."
And then there's the slightly more direct one where Jimmy goes, "I used to fuck guys like you in prison."
Now, why didn't he subtle?
Less subtle.
I don't understand why he didn't say, "I used to fuck up guys like you
because
in prison."
He doesn't but
he's mean that. No, he doesn't, does he?
No.
No.
What? Doesn't. That wouldn't work then. He means, I used to have sex with men like you in prison because I'm the badass in prison who has sex with guys like you.
Yeah.
And the villain in his trophy room says, "The only thing missing here is your ass."
When I started watching this film, I didn't think it would end with a scene where someone was getting squashed by a taxidermied polar bear. I just didn't think that's where it was going to go.
And then rather than move, shoots it several times as it's falling on him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
In terms of going back to Dalton's introduction, though, we learn quite a lot about him when he goes to hospital. So when he goes to the hospital and meets his love interest,
Kelly Lynch,
She's sewing him up. She looks through his medical records, as you said, and they would suggest that he's not very good at his job. He's had 9 staples, 31 broken bones, 2 bullet wounds, 9 puncture wounds, 4 stainless steel screws, which makes her say, "Do you ever win a fight?"
Yeah. Well, obviously,
damning.
I don't think it means he's bad at his job, because it's around this time he says the most immortal line in the whole of the movie, where she goes, does it not hurt? And he goes, "Pain don't hurt."
Yeah, I didn't get that.
I thought you were going to say another line in that same scene. He says, "Nobody ever wins a fight."
Yeah, that's a good line.
Which is a real thing,
yeah,
isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
But he wins loads of fights.
But not really.
I'd argue that the guy with his throat missing probably is the loser in that fight.
So it made me, and it's one of the most iconic scenes from this, it made me Google, can you rip out a man's throat?
Oh, and?
Would you like to know?
Yes.
There seems to be some debate online as to whether you can or can't, but the most...
Well, I hear the police are at your house now, so I think
the most, that's the internet for you, isn't it? Healthy debate about everything. That's why they created it.
The most popular response answer to this question was, you can crush someone's trachea with a moderately strong grip and strength. Tearing human flesh isn't as hard as you think. It's by no means easy, but it's really not impossible. However, that answer did have lots of spelling mistakes, which makes me
dubious.
And there are throat rips in Under Siege, Blade, John Rambo, Underworld and Game of Thrones. I wanted to see where else this happened. Because
where's the Game of Thrones one?
I don't watch it.
Oh.
I think it involved the big guy played by Jason Momoa.
Yeah. No.
I don't know.
No.
I don't watch.
I mean, the throat rip, it's where Kelly Lynch sort of is like, she loses interest in him. You know, she Kelly Lynch actually, in her preparation for this film, spent a month hanging out in a real emergency room.
Bullshit! I've never seen a doctor with so much fucking time off. She's there all the fucking time. Like, I thought we could go for a drive. I thought we could have a shag. You're supposed to be an emergency room doctor.
And at least once she goes to work pissed after 2 hours sleep. Yeah,
that bit's probably quite realistic, to be fair. She gets loads of time off. And then they're like, well, he's like, where's Dr. Doc or whatever he calls her?
Doc.
She's in the x-ray room and she's just sort of got her glasses on. So now, you know, she's clever and she's just staring at these x-rays like, what the fuck is this?
No, she's also staring at his medical records because they also have his educational history in there.
Is that a real thing?
What else is it? No, it's a dossier that he carries around on himself.
Yeah.
What the hell else is in there? Vicky, let's talk about sex.
Okay, Chris.
Okay, so I'll be back in 5, 10. How long do you need?
So there's some serious sex moves going on in this film.
Yeah, it's the song. Like, oh, that song. I mean...
Do you want to know a weird thing about that song choice? So it's
I mean, it's making me very flushed, like...
As in, it's a sexy song to make love to?
What song
is it?
Yeah, you have to say what it is.
Oh, sorry. These Arms of Mine, Otis Redding. You could show two people dry humping in a Wetherspoons to that song and it would be the most erotic thing you'd ever seen in your life.
But do you want to know a weird thing about that song choice?
No, because I love it so much.
2 years earlier, they used that song in Dirty Dancing when he gets together with her, when they meet up in private in a room. I mean, come on, there's more than one song.
Who knows? Maybe Patrick Swayze has to hear that song to really to get aroused, convince as an aroused man in a sex scene.
Yeah. I thought it works. It would work for a lot of people.
Maybe it makes him do something quite specific because when I was falling down this sinkhole of research, there's a deleted scene from Dirty Dancing where he does pretty much the same sex move as he does in here, except they stay fully clothed. But it's where she sort of mounts him and he holds her around his, with her legs around his
waist.
Don't
need a mime.
and it's identical. It's like, again, like, did someone just watch Dirty Dancing and like copy and paste those?
Look, there's a reason Dirty Dancing is so popular, and it is not for its relatively frank portrayal of procuring an abortion.
Bloody hell, I wasn't expecting it to go there.
What I will say is, when you wake up from a sex nap, which I do like because he's like, that sex has been so outstanding that she's had to have a small nap because when she wakes up, it's not morning, it's still night.
No, I think she's in pain because she has no skin on her back because he shoved her against a brick wall and pulled her up and down.
Like I say, play that song, do what the fuck you want. Obviously, you're looking at Patrick Swayze and you're thinking of him as a dancer.
So there are multiple opportunities in this film for Swayze to dance. Even there's a moment where his girlfriend dances with his best friend and I'm thinking, why?
Get the fuck
why
up!
Are you getting yes! going?
I think he's gone out of his way to make sure he doesn't dance.
No, I saw an MTV special from the time where he literally said, I did this to prove I could be a badass because he wanted to sort of distance himself.
And he can. He also is sexy though, because when the first time we see Patrick Swayze's buttocks in this film is when the waitress Carrie Ann, who really needs to learn how to serve a beer, because one of the beers she serves right at the start is all head.
Oh, I saw that. That really annoyed me.
And it was one of the most upsetting things. Forget the throat rip. That beer is all head.
What a waste.
She sees his bottom when she visits his incredibly unsecure house.
Oh, yeah.
Flat, and literally a cartoon moment.
Yeah.
She sees his bottom and she goes...
She does.
It's Homer Simpson seeing a donut. It's like...
We should talk a little bit about Brad Wesley, the villain, played by the brilliant Ben Gazzara. I was trying to figure out what he's up to. His main thing is shaking down this town. But as far as I can see it, the town has one bar, one store, and one car dealership.
Four car dealerships. If there's one thing you can get in this town, it's auto parts and cars.
But how much money is that amounting to? He's a cracking villain.
Yeah, he's a great villain.
I really like him in this.
Because he likes to have a good time as well when he's driving his car down the road, does listening to his songs, and he's got a really passionate opinion about music. He does not like new music.
No.
He likes bands to play something with balls.
But he then does something later in the film, which, talking about being influential, he says he's going to kill Dalton's girl or his best friend via the flip of a coin.
Yes.
Two-Face.
Was Christopher Nolan watching this? I mean, it's literally the same thing. It's the same moment.
It's weaker than the connection between the two films, but it's a connection.
Philosophizing bouncers. Do you know how it's connected to one of the films we spoke about last week?
What did we talk about last week?
I think Alex is going to know.
Yes, I do, actually. Weirdly enough, the same fight coordinator, Benny Erkowitz.
A.K.A. The Jet. Yeah, yeah.
He did the fight choreography for this movie. He also did the fight choreography for Street Fighter, which we talked about last week. And the fights in this are absolutely fantastic, which proves what you can do when you have more than 30 minutes to prep a fight scene.
It's true.
Which he did on Street Fighter.
It's true. He was a karate expert who had 200 wins and no losses. And he's the only fighter to have retained 6 world titles in 5 weight divisions for 24 consecutive years.
He's a proper legend. And and Patrick Swayze was a martial artist as well.
Not as much as he was a dancer.
Oh, I thought he did martial arts.
Yeah,
as well.
I watched a couple of Patrick Swayze biographies.
Okay.
And he'd only really danced
up until... week, haven't you?
I'm between jobs, Alex, as you know. But he spent a long time training for this. And since then, after that, he did continue kickboxing.
If you ever want to see one of the greatest fights ever in movie history, you need to look at the film Wheels on Meals, Jackie Chan. The final fight in that is him and Benny, the Jet. And it's one of the greatest fights. Jackie Chan quotes it as his favourite fight of his own fights. And it's worth watching. It's on YouTube. Yeah, Wheels on Meals. Also, watch the whole movie because it's a great Jackie Chan movie.
It's based on, as I could figure out, it's based on 2 true stories as well, Roadhouse.
What?
What, the Bouncers of Ireland and...
Well, in the Roger Ebert review, if you read the whole thing...
which I did, shut up!
he says Roadhouse is based on an actual case in Missouri where the local bad guy, universally hated by everyone in town, was murdered in broad daylight and no one in town seems to have seen a thing. And there is a former caller called Norman Storm Cantwell... who, when he gave up bouncing, graduated to a career in professional defence training, incorporating Tai Chi and Eastern philosophy. And he now teaches that in Kansas. The only difference between him and this character is he's completely bald. About 20 minutes into this film, the one thing I was thinking is, what could make this film better? And the only thing I could come up with
Nothing.
Was a monster truck. And then, lo and behold, we get a weird
sense.
Subplot
it's
with
so
freaking
stupid.
Bigfoot.
Yep.
It's so stupid.
The bit where the only stupid bit... No, the monster truck thing
the
is
only
great.
Stupid bit.
The only stupid bit in this film is where Evil Jimmy, I used to fuck guys like in prison, Guy, and another of the henchmen are sitting in Bigfoot in the car park of the Double Deuce, and Patrick Swayze and Kelly Lynch walk out and they're meant to be spying on them surreptitiously. And Patrick Swayze doesn't go, there's that fucking monster truck.
I want to come back to something you said right at the start of this though, Vicky, because I flip-flopped on this. Do you think they were making a tongue-in-cheek film on purpose? Because certainly in the documentary on the Blu-ray that was made a couple of years ago, they all say, we were in on the joke, it was supposed to be a comedy, this and that. And then I'm just not
Hindsight's
so sure.
2020.
Exactly. I'm just not sure. I'm not sure if everyone was in on the joke or whether this was to be taken
they were making
relatively
a Western.
Seriously.
Well, it depends how seriously you take Westerns.
But don't things like the polar bear sequence you described, doesn't that kind of take you out of the movie somewhat?
No, because it's set up moments earlier where the dude is like, I hate this room. And you're like, oh, he hates taxidermy. I bet something happens with taxidermy. Bang, something happens with taxidermy.
Do you not think I don't want to be this person, but it's not enough to have 2 good-looking people look at each other and then you're like, oh, well, you've got so much chemistry that I completely believe everything that's about to... It's almost enough, but it's not enough. So when he's going to, like, get her or rescue. Oh, no, that's it. He bursts into the x-ray room and she's like, I'm looking at x-rays and doing my job.
1 month in the real life ER.
Yeah. He's like, we're going. And I just thought, what would you two talk about if you were going to go anywhere? Like, what have you two got in common? Just apart from the fact that you're both incredibly good looking.
She fixes bones, he breaks them. Done. Moving on.
Ugh. Yeah, and being a good looking person myself, it doesn't matter. I just give them one glance and then we're off. And why are you laughing?
Sorry, that was
Vicky.
The thing.
Sorry. Come on. Do you want some bad news now?
Is it that we have to talk about the toughest man in the world again?
You leave the toughest man in the world alone.
Ever. It's
probably the best of these two. Dalton is dead. No, the character of Dalton is dead.
Oh, is this explained in Roadhouse 2?
Yeah, they made a sequel in which Patrick Swayze did not want to appear, so they killed him off screen. Really? I just think it's unnecessary. In the Roadhouse shared universe, he's gone.
Have you seen the sequel? Because you've had a quiet week.
No, it wasn't that quiet.
I'll just make a serious point about the naked swim. That is, to my eyes, meant to be Adam and Eve before the fall of man. So the town has been returned to innocence, and that's why they're naked, not just because they're both
skinny dipping
and really want to do it. Mm-hmm. It's Adam and Eve before the fall, and they're going to populate the town with their gorgeous babies.
Do you think that's what a director called Rowdy was going for?
I felt so bad for her, because he's obviously like, can you get up from your sex nap and please wrap a sheet around yourself for modesty, but don't wrap it all the way around because we really want to see your bum. The person I was watching it with thought Brad Wesley was her dad, so that didn't come across very well to them.
Please say that was one of your kids.
Strangely, they're not allowed to watch Roadhouse.
What?
Yeah.
You need to expose them to stuff like this early.
God, you're right. I should take parenting advice from you. That's a brilliant idea.
But you need to start with Toughest Man in the World and build up to
that. They were allowed to watch that. There's nothing in that.
Yeah, I was six.
Okay. There we have it. Those were the two movies, The Toughest Man in the World and Roadhouse. I guess we can make this quick this week. Which movie is the winner? Can I start, Chris?
No, Vicky starts. Oh. No, all right, Alex, you start.
Roadhouse,
I know you want to.
Vicky.
Roadhouse.
Great.
Sorry,
so,
Chris.
There we go. That is Roadhouse has won this week. Do you want to add something? Because I'm pretty certain that's all we need to say. Roadhouse is the winner because it's an actual film.
Yes.
Yeah, but do you want to know the final score?
What score?
What do you mean?
Well, if it's 3 votes or 2 votes to 1.
Oh, fine. Yeah, what would you have gone for?
If The Toughest Man in the World had ended where my videotape ended.
Mm-hmm.
It might have been in the running.
Really?
But it's not, and it didn't, so Roadhouse.
Great! 3 for 3 for Roadhouse, a brilliant film. That is the winner this week. Roadhouse. On to next week's show. Vicky, it was your turn to pick. Enlighten us. Where are we going and what are we doing?
Okay, so Chris, can you put your phone down, please? You are getting 1974's Dark Star.
Oh, John Carpenter.
And Alex, bringing you bang up to date with 1999's Galaxy Quest.
Okay. Dark Star and Galaxy Quest. Cool.
Interesting.
That is interesting.
And I cannot think of the connection off the top of my head.
That's worrying.
Maybe you can, dear Fight fans, if you can and you want to get in touch with us, either about The Toughest Man in the World or Roadhouse, any thoughts on those, get in touch, or indeed about Dark Star and Galaxy Quest, if you know what the connection is. Chris, what are the details?
So you can hit us up on Twitter. We are at ClashPod, and we actually have a new email address. So forget what we said in week 1 and 2. The email address now is show@clashpod.com. That is show@clashpod.com.
Cheers for listening, and please do subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces 3 thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around the duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.